Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, March 9th, 2017. Tonight's main science topic, I'll be talking a little bit about some space science topics, but mainly the wing generator comes back into the news, and so very important announcements relative to the wing generator. You'll hear about that in a minute. This is an email that came in from a listener talking about wind power, supposedly, in the United States. And let me pull up this email. Okay, here it is. It says that wind power is now the largest source of renewable energy generating capacity. And this is from the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Passing hydro power in 2016. Since the two sources produce electricity at nearly the same rate, we'll soon see wind surpass hydro in terms of electricity produced. Wind power capacity has grown at an astonishing pace, and 2016 was no exception. This is, I'm reading from the announcement here, the government announcement. It says, as companies rush to take advantage of tax incentives for renewable power, tax incentives, none of this would exist. Not a single wind tower would be out there. Well, maybe a couple. But these are being put in basically for free because of tax incentives. And they don't work. They don't produce power. There's a few of them spinning. When you drive by these and you see fields and fields of these, just understand you're paying for those, not the owners. They are the owners. You're the payee. The payer. They're getting these babies for free. Okay, well, let me read the rest of this. The U.S. Saw 8.7 gigawatts of new wind energy capacity installed in 2016. And now let me bring that down in terms of numbers. That translates into approximately 6,000 new wind towers. And so I'll put that into perspective in a minute. That's the most since 2012, the article says, the last time tax incentives were scheduled to expire. So these tax incentives are about to expire, so everybody's jumping and running to install wind towers, because they get them for free. You, the taxpayer, are paying for this. This has pushed the U.S. total wind capacity to over 81 gigawatts. Now, there again, I'll put that into numbers. That means that the installed base, so to speak, is around 54,000 wind generators. Now, let me explain something also, that most of these get shut down. The more they put in, the less able the central power companies are able to deal with the electricity generated by these. So when you see those three-blade wind generators spinning out in the field, there's actually a motor inside that's making them turn. Now it's comparing to hydro, which was around 80 gigawatts. And then they state this, that since generators can't be run nonstop, they only generate a fraction of the electricity of their capacity, suggests that, and then the result is that wind won't need to grow too much more to pass hydro completely. They're allowing a industry standard of 34% for wind generation. Now, that is very gracious. It's probably half that if they're lucky. I'd estimate 10 to 15%. And so instead of an installed base of 81 gigawatts, it's around 8 gigawatts. So let me just put that into perspective. Of the 54,000 wind generators that are installed around the United States, it's the equivalent, if they were running at full capacity, of only 5,000, or maybe, if they were lucky, 7,500 or 8,000. Let's just round it up, 8,000 wind generators. instead of the 54,000 that are actually installed. Now, if you look at these installations in the U.S. and in Canada, where probably the biggest installed base is located, most of these are sitting there obsolete and not operating at all. They've had a catastrophic failure inside. Remember that those three blade arms, these weigh upwards of 60 tons. That's the equivalent of the weight of about 50 automobiles out there in one of those arms. And so, at any rate, now what's going to happen, since the tax incentives are going away and these are not able to produce a profit, and the people have gotten their money out up front, they're not going to put any of that hard-earned money into maintenance. So one by one, these are going to become defunct and not work. And if they are working on a nice windy day, chances are the power company is going to turn them off remotely, because they can't accept the surges that are caused by these, and in the central power company, because they can't control the voltage. Okay, so anyway, that leads into the main science topic I'll be talking about in a minute, my wing generator, and some of the details there. But this whole issue of tax incentives for alternative energy, in my book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project, I have a chapter on the myth of renewable energy, and I talk about this in detail. So once the tax incentives go away, you're just going to see these things sitting idle out there, and they're not even going to pay for the electricity to make the motor run to make them turn. They're just going to be sitting out there, and all the tree huggers are going to look out, and they're going to think, oh, generating free wind electricity. Nope, sorry, go hug your trees. But, you know, and they don't talk about the immense ecological damage that occurs when they make the magnets for those wind generators, when they make the blades and all the other components. Can you imagine the amount of chemicals and waste and energy that it takes to build one of those towers? Now, in my study dealing with alternative energy, we know the amount of energy that the world uses on a daily basis and on an annual basis. It would take 77 million of the three-blade wind generators working at full capacity. No, I'm sorry, at their stated 20% capacity, 77 million of them to actually produce the world's energy needs. And so in the tax incentive business of installing wind generators, the United States has an estimated 54,000. It would take 1,000 times that, actually about 1,200 times that many, to meet the world's energy needs. Now, this is not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. It's not possible. It's not feasible. And the Central Power Company would not allow it, because then they would be out of business. Goodness grief. So anyway, the alternative energy business has always been a scam. In the Obama administration, there was $150 billion. That's 15% of $1 trillion. Went into so-called alternative energy projects. All of them are belly up. There's not a single one that succeeded. Anyway, I could go on and on about this, but this is very important stuff to understand the collusion, the graft and corruption in the United States. Now, there's countries like England and Northern England and I believe Scotland and the Netherlands. There's a lot of these countries that have outlawed the three-blade wind generator because of the fact that these are scams. They don't work. They've bought into it. Politicians bought a bill of goods. And, gee, we know politicians sometimes aren't the brightest bulbs on the tree. They bought into this big time, and now they're sitting with an immense bill, And there's no energy being produced from those facilities. So they literally outlawed them. But now they're stuck with these eyesores all over the beautiful landscape up there, not producing any energy. Okay, enough of that. Okay, now here is some, excuse me a minute, I got to tone my mic down a bit here. I'm not sure why it's so hot, but okay. The Colbrin. Now, the Colbrin is a topic that I wrote about back in the early 2000s. I got permission from the Chaldean Trust to use the information from the Colbrin, and the result was my book, Atlantis to Tesla, The Colbrin Connection. Immediately on the heels of me releasing that, the Colbrin was absconded by a group of people and just turned it into a nutcase book that's now sold on Amazon. All of the other booksellers on the internet took that book off because they realized there was copyright infringement. But Amazon continues to sell it because guess what? Amazon is one of the arms of the CIA. And so they wanted to destroy the Colbrin. What is the Colbrin? The original book, and you can read about the history at ChaldeanTrust.org. The link to this is on my webpage. But the bottom line is that recently, the Chaldean Trust has started to market and sell the real Colbrin in an ebook format, and it's only $15. The hardcover Colbrin is a beautiful book with shipping. It's probably in the $100 neighborhood. You order it directly from Australia. I think it's Goodies Bookstore. But $15 for an e-copy, and when I saw that, I just went straight there and I bought that, and they have other books there available also. That you should probably buy some of those other books also. But I put a link on my webpage. You'll see it, just scroll down a little bit. It's the ChaldeanTrust.org, etc. Click on that. You'll go to the page and get the real deal, the Colbrin, from the ChaldeanTrust.org. And by the way, let me just explain, the Chaldean Trust, this is a history, you can read about it on their page. It's really a remnant of a library that was held in England after the crucifixion of Christ. Joseph of Arimathea took his library to England and built an abbey at Glastonbury. And the contents of that library, much of it was, I don't know the percentage, but some was burned when the Roman army came out a few hundred years later. They wanted to destroy all that history. And this is part of the destruction of information. They did not want this information in private hands. So this had been kept in private hands. And of course, the Latin and the other languages that were available at the time, we still know. So the translations came from those early works, basically those early libraries. And what we learn is that it was common knowledge amongst the wealthy people, at least around the time of Christ, and you can see this in Christ's teachings, the knowledge of the ancient disasters by comets. And that's why the Chaldean Trust got one of these, the first three copies of the Colbrin that came into the United States, one of the copies got to me, and they gave it to me because they wanted me to interpret what this meant. And so, of course, it was all about comets and the ancient tales of the destruction of Earth, the destruction of man, and the rebirth of man. It's very descriptive when you start out. And then there's a lot of great material on how to live your life. So you can see they were well advanced from what we do today, from the lifestyles that people live today. So anyway, I highly recommend that. Go to my webpage, scroll down, link there for the Chaldean Trust, and for $15, you get a copy of the Colbrin. And of course, it's great because it's portable. And then I also recommend, if you have a book collection or if you like paper books or printed books, buy the real Colbrin. Like I say, it's about $100. I don't know what the current price is, but it's such a big, beautiful book. It's worth getting and holding in your hand. You know, and as I said, do not buy the one from Amazon. That is not the Colburn. That is a plagiarized piece and then changed into something very bizarre and weird. So don't get the thing that's called the Colburn Bible from Amazon. Do not get it there. And if you did, if you mistakenly got it there, send it back. Get your money back. And complain to Amazon for selling that kind of garbage. Get the original version of the Colburn. Okay, enough of that. Just a couple quick announcements. I don't want to waste a lot of time on this, but NASA has come out and really hit the press hard all over the place that they've discovered seven new planets. No, they did not discover seven new planets. There's a star that has a variable output. They put the data in a computer program to see what the best possible orbits were, and it spits out that something like seven planets. They've got them Earth-like with water. There's people living there. There's dinosaurs running around. Everybody, you know, half of NASA's packing their bags to go there. They didn't discover anything. It's all garbage. And it just drives me crazy when these scientists, the data was so remarkable. Sorry, NASA, you didn't discover anything. You've discovered a star that has a variable light output, and it does not mean necessarily that there are planets there. They did the same thing a number of months ago. NASA also is claiming that it's going to build a magnetic field around the planet Mars. And when I saw this, I thought to myself, you know, there must be something in the water over there that these people are just, you know, there might be. I used to think it was probably something like marijuana. Now I'm thinking it's more like LSD, because you could only be hallucinating to make a statement like this. They can't even get into low Earth orbit. They don't have a rocket. They have some borrowed rockets and some medium lift rocket capability that they get from other people, but NASA has no ability itself to even get a mouse into space. And then they're going to colonize Mars and put an artificial magnetic field around it. They don't exactly tell us how they're going to do all of this, but one of the funniest things that came along was the announcement that they have now developed, or private company for NASA has developed, this vest that supposedly the astronauts are supposed to put on to protect them from high-level radiation, like gamma rays and X-rays. And it looks like something out of Flash Gordon. The commentary on the article says that they're going to, that this vest is supposed to protect the vital organs of the astronaut. And it goes, it's like a vest, like you'd put on a little bit cold today, I'm going to put my vest on under my jacket. It looks like a vest. And it looks like it's made out of some kind of plastic material. It looks like it's flexible. And they're claiming that this is supposed to protect the astronauts. Well, first of all, it doesn't cover their head or their reproductive organs. So apparently NASA doesn't consider them important as vital organs of the body. Secondly, how does this little thin plastic-looking material protect from X-rays that you typically need about 2 inches of solid lead or more to protect you? And thirdly, if they now need a vest to go into space, how come the Apollo astronauts all went to the moon, they all came back, they all lived to ripe old ages and never needed this magic vest? I call it the magic vest because, you know, I don't know what else to call it. They call it NASA's magic vest because it's performing magic that's beyond any physical principles. We're talking about X-ray radiation that is so intense that it would, you know, it's basically like cooking in a microwave oven. In short order, people would be dead, and any exposed skin or body parts would be immediately burned, severely burned. And so how in the world, I mean, this is, anyway, I can't even go on, but all I'm going to tell you is NASA is over the top recently I don't even know, I can't even imagine what these people are thinking, but these are all controlled news releases meant for you, the public. So I think they're fishing for money. That's all I can say. Along with my show today, I'm going to be posting a graph of the water level of Lake Mead, and that's where the Hoover Dam is. Now, there's no secret, there's a drought out there, there's been a drought, and so this past year, 2016, the lake level of Lake Mead hit an all-time low. They thought it was low in 2014, it dropped down even lower to 2016. But basically that means that the Hoover Dam is really not producing power. It's capable of producing about 2 gigawatts of power, which is a pretty good amount of power. That's the equivalent of about 4 nuclear generators, typical nuclear generator running around 500 megawatts, something like that. So 4 of these nuke power plants, excuse me, I'm kind of fighting a bit of gunk here in my head and throat tonight. But so anyway, as the picture of the week, go take a look, and that'll be posted there. And look at the water levels through the very high levels and the very low levels of the lake there, the artificially man-made lake. And they say the cement in the dam is still drying. It's still curing after, you know 78 years or so of trying to solidify the cement. Now look at the amount of work and time and materials that it took to make that facility. And when the big wing generators become developed, 4 of my wing generators will be producing the equivalent energy of the Hoover Dam. So anyway, just something to make note of. This week, my paid cast, by the way, and I want everybody to join. This helps me out quite a bit. It's $3.95 a month. If you haven't joined yet, go to the webpage, $3.95 a month, and I encourage people to buy all the way back to August. It's about a $27 initial purchase. Then you get all the paid casts going all the way back to August because they're in order. And then it's a PayPal, $3.95 a month into the future. And so that's, I encourage you to go to the webpage. It's right at the top. And for those people that are still looking for my white paper dealing with the election results being fraudulent, that the popular vote really was about Trump, 82 million, and Hillary Clinton, about 48 million. And so the mathematical analysis that brings that result is in the February paid cast. So I encourage people to go purchase the paid cast. And then also you can buy my ebooks, The Atlantis to Tesla, The Colburn Connection, or the ebook library for a reduced price along with the paid cast. So go check that out on my webpage. And before I forget it, I'm continuing this sale. I put it up like last weekend or something, and it was just going to run through till Sunday night. And then I got a bunch of requests from people that were on Social Security or waiting for pension checks so that they could be included in the sale. So I decided to leave it up there. The sale is still there. It'll be on for a few more days till these other people get caught up and are able to participate in the sale. And so anyway, the sale is still there. It's unbelievably good prices on my water filter products. The webpage, jmccsci.com. Go to the link to the webpage, the subpage to order. And by the way, the profit from that is going to fund my current wing generator project, which is, I'm talking about tonight. It's being released in a couple days here. And so the money also goes to help that out. So it's a way of helping me out, and you get some great water filter products, the best in the world, for a very, very low price. Thank you. I forgot to mention the topic this week with the paid cast. It's in the ongoing series of Tesla's Mind, Tesla versus Einstein. I didn't quite finish that a couple weeks ago when I started that topic. But this time I'm going to take the negative commentary against Tesla and Einstein and put it into perspective because it's really important. These are two very important scientists. They were concurrent in history. Tesla was older by about 20 years. He died sooner. He died in 1943, Einstein in 1955. But they contributed some major work, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. Interestingly enough, Tesla criticized general relativity, but Einstein did also. Einstein was not a happy camper with this whole thing being railroaded through of general relativity. But anyway, I'll be talking about that and going into detail, pulling apart some of the criticisms of both Einstein and Tesla and looking where they came from, where these criticisms came from, and what was the content of the criticism, who were the authors. And in some cases, the authors don't put their name, which is very telling. But anyway, that's this week's Paidcast. And then last week and the next 2 weeks are the ongoing series Cosmos, where I use the Carl Sagan 1980 Cosmos series talking points to develop my theoretical work and put that into perspective. And also, I compare it with the 2014 Neil deGrasse Tyson Cosmos series, which really wasn't that big compared to the original Carl Sagan Cosmos series. But anyway, my commentary is relative to my science and the importance of understanding that the science that's being pawned off on you, the public, today is just horrifically incorrect. And Carl Sagan and Tyson, deGrasse Tyson, are two of the people who I call it science entertainment. It's really not science. And if you look at these productions, Hollywood productions of the Cosmos series, there's very little science in there. It's a lot of, let me give you an example. When Carl Sagan is talking about evolution, he gives an example, a 7-minute, very lengthy, out-of-place discussion of a little crab from a bay in Japan and how it has the face, it looks like a samurai face on it, and the fishermen throw it back in, and therefore natural selection allowed it to survive. But natural selection refers to evolution. In other words, Darwin's was not talking about fishermen throwing little crabs back in the water because they had a pretty picture on their back. Evolution and the concept of natural selection, that species are born and created out of natural selection, is a topic that's really, in a sense, controversial. Because I've yet to talk to any scientist that has seen and witnessed a new species created. That's the problem. And nobody was around millions of years ago or hundreds of millions of years ago to observe so-called creation of new species. So in the strict scientific sense, evolution has not been proven. Not to my satisfaction. It sounds like a great story. It sounds like it could be true. But that's not good enough by scientific standards. Scientific standards requires proof and direct observations that is repeatable by you, by me, by a guy in Russia, by a guy in South America, or any place else in the universe. That is what science is about. It's not a popular vote. It's not something that seems good on the surface. It's something that is observable, provable by observation. And by definition, none of us were around when we were created by whatever means. And so by the strictest definition, evolution is not a provable theory and relies on faith, just like creation. So anyway, a little bit of a topic there, but that's my paid cast for last week, and the next 2 weeks deals with the Carl Sagan, leveraging off the talking points of the Carl Sagan Cosmos series, and then discussing details like this. Okay, And by the way, just go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Now, on to the main science topic, the wing generator. And let me just explain what's going on. I want to prep the public a little bit because this is the release of this is very nigh. It's very soon. And so I want the people to get their pocketbooks ready because what I'm selling, there's a number of developments going on concurrently. But this development kind of happened out of necessity, and it's the first one to be publicly released, in a sense. There might be some other concurrent releases of other technologies relative to the wing generator. So that's we're going to see where that comes in. There's quite a bit going on in the background. That's all I can tell you. But this particular development, I had a very hands-on part of this in the effort to supply small 1 to 3 kilowatt, which is not really small for a home system. That's a fairly decent power system, to third world countries. Now, what does this mean? This means that a guy living out in a little, in a little farm out on the edge of nowhere where they have terrible service, the service cuts off regularly. These are poor people. They don't have a lot of money and they cannot afford to pay the electric bills, or they can, but still that's a significant charge on their life. Buying or building an inexpensive wing generator that works at low wind speeds and still produces a significant amount of power is a vital instrument for their well-being. So I took it upon myself to design a wing generator specifically for these people that you can build easily from parts that can be obtained in pretty much any place in the world. Okay, so that's the first thing. So when I set out to do this, I set some requirements. What materials are basically available? And if there's probably better ways to make all of the energy generation and transfer and the gear ratios and everything like that. There's better ways to do it, but it costs money. It takes manufacturing. It takes access to manufactured products that are very specific. So what I did is I said, okay, that's not what I want these people to have to go through. I want them to be able to go into town, little town someplace, buy the parts, and put together a wing generator with materials that you can readily find any place in a third world country. So that was my requirement. And what's the power rate? 1 to 3 kilowatts. Now, how much is that? Let's say you were going to buy a gas generator or propane generator or a diesel generator for backup for your house. Okay, so you've got your house in suburbia, which is a nice house. Your average electric use per hour is around 1,300 watts. That means that's the equivalent of plugging in 13 100-watt light bulbs and letting them run all day long, all night, 30 days a month and 365 days a year. Letting those bulbs, that's how much, on average, electricity your house uses. This is a United States average. So this cuts through the big expensive houses and down through the little houses out in the country. That's the average. So you can imagine that a guy in a third world country living out on the edge of nowhere is certainly not going to use that level of power. They're probably 20% of that. And they don't have as many lights. They run the washing machine once per week. They probably don't have, they may have a little water pump that runs fairly efficient, and they might have a television or something, you know, that runs. So that's what an average small farm would be. And maybe during, say, harvest time, they have some equipment that uses electricity or for planting or whatever they're doing, has some electric needs, but they're not that high. So the average household is using 1.3 kilowatts. Well, let's just do an average. Let's just say one kilowatt. And so if you have a electrical production wing generator that does 3 kilowatts on average, and it runs fairly efficiently, you're capable of easily operating your little farm with that amount of power. And it's not that expensive to get the components to build this. And so I said, okay, what I'm going to do, and then here's what I'm building up to. The plans to build this, I'm not going to be selling these directly because I personally do not want to be in the small energy market, the home system. I don't want to sell them. I don't want to build them. I don't want to sell them directly. Excuse me. In that energy range. 10 times that, yeah, that's not a problem. There's 10 times that would run a small eco-village or a large ranch or a small manufacturing facility that's out in the country or something like that. There's a huge demand for the next size up. And there's a huge demand for this small one. But I don't want to stand there and manufacture them. So anyway, the plan here is this is with people in the United States. I'm going to be selling the plans. Now, if you don't already have the wing generator book, you can buy that independently or I can sell it with the, that's something I'm going to require. And so I'm going to sell the plans and that gives you the rights to build one of these wing generators. And if you want to go into production, or there might be people out there that go, well, I built this, and I can build hundreds more and sell them to people. I know people that want them, and I could sell them. Well, then we'll enter into a contractual situation where you just pay me royalty fees, and very, very small, 5%. And that's the way the Indiegogo fundraiser was set up a year ago when I was involved in that. That was for the 12-meter model. And anyway, the part of the reason of doing this small model and selling the designs, the plans, etc., is to raise the money so that we then reinvest that money into the next size up generator. The revenue from those will go back into the business. Then we don't deal with investors, those slimy, creepy, greedy, crawly people out there in the investment and venture capital world that I don't want to have anything to do with. So I don't have to deal with them. And this is a way for me to generate revenue from the project, reinvest in the project, etc. And so that's what's going on. And like I said, if you buy water filter products now, if you're not going to buy the wing generator design or whatever, but people can also buy the wing generator design and just take a look at it, you know, to see what's going on. See what it looks like, see what it takes to build one. And I'll give you a little bit of a tip. If you already have the wing generator book, which is about a $50 book, the ebook, McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project, the design by itself without the book is going to be around $200. And what is that going to do? That's going to get you the ability to build one system. And how much is that system going to cost you for a basic system to get you alternating current that will you can use, say, in your cabin or whatever, would be under $1,000, I estimate, probably around $800. If you have a bigger system with more batteries, bigger inverter, and other bigger capabilities, then it's going to cost you more. But anyway, that's kind of in the price range. And so anyway, the wattage range from 1 to 3 kilowatts, which is would be, now I was talking about, if you went out to buy a generator, a gas or a propane or a diesel generator as a backup for your house, that's about the size you would buy. If you were really wanted to cover the bases, you'd probably run up to about a 5-kilowatt generator. And that would pretty much cover your needs for your household. That would cover your refrigerator and television and washing machine and the furnace and the air conditioner, things like that. You could run all the things you typically have in your household pretty easily with a 5-kilowatt generator sitting outside your house. So a 1 to 3 kilowatt wing generator is a pretty healthy device, especially if you're a farmer living out at the end of the electric line in the middle of a third world country. It's a very capable device. It will capture in three kilowatts is quite a bit. And remember that you're storing up energy into a battery pack when you're sleeping and not running any electrical devices at all. And so the energy production from this is going on 24 hours a day, is whenever the wind's blowing. The other thing about the wing generator, it's very efficient. It's a very efficient device, and at low wind speeds will still produce a significant amount of energy. If you go out on the market today and you say you want to buy a 3-kilowatt wind generator, 3-blade or whatever they sell you, that wind generator, if it's blowing at 30-mile-an-hour wind, is blowing like crazy, that commercial wind generator today will produce, with that heavy wind, it'll probably produce 3 kilowatts of power. But let's say your batteries are full and you don't need 3 kilowatts of power. That's a lot of power. And your batteries are full and you're not using a lot of electricity in your house, that wind generator is going to produce 3 kilowatts of power. And it has no place to go. So there's a problem there in that this device is going to produce too much power sometimes. Conversely, if you're in need of a lot of energy and the wind is only blowing at 15 miles an hour, then that device is going to produce about 1/10 of 3 kilowatts, or only around 300 watts, which is enough to run 200-watt light bulbs. So the products that are being sold today don't meet the needs, and a lot of people have invested a lot of money in these, and they have not really realized their return on investment. Somebody sold them a bill of goods that was the best thing on the market at the time, but literally they just don't work. They don't meet the needs. So the other thing that I've designed into my system is if the wind is blowing like crazy and you're not using electricity, then it's not producing energy. It knows when to produce energy, when you need it, and if there's not much wind at all and you have to run, then you need a battery pack that's sufficient to carry you through the times when there's not a lot of wind. But it's not going to overproduce when you are not using much electricity in your house and the wind's blowing like crazy. It senses that and says, okay, I'm not going to produce electricity because the batteries are full. It's going to produce just the amount of electricity that you need in the house. And so anyway, I'm not going to go into a lot of details about how this happens, but that's the concept. So it's for a guy living out in the country, it's a relatively carefree system. You put it up, you get a battery pack that's equivalent of what you need for your system, and that's fairly easy to spec out. And then that's it. You plug it in and years go by and the thing just keeps running. So it's plans to build this. And now, what do you have to be? Do you have to be a rocket scientist to build this? No, you really don't. But you need at least access to some people with some skills, and I'll talk more about that later. But basically, an average person can build these. And if you're in a city, you're probably going to have to deal with zoning issues. And maybe it's not possible to put one up in a city someplace. But for the average person who's got a cabin out in the country or a place up on the lake or a farmer that needs extra power out at the barn, which is far away, or a remote building where he's always wanted power, etc., or anything like that, any condition like that, this is the unit for you. And so there's a lot of variables in it, too many details to go into here. And then the other half of this is that this will help me out to push the effort through to build the bigger systems. And so, like I say, there's a lot going on in the background. This is the first public release, and I hope that a lot of people out there are very excited about this. It's something that has taken a lot of twists and turns since I put this up for the public to see, and I put out the book, the Wing Generator book. But I'll make a comment here, and it's just a comment that the Wing Generator is working much better than I ever imagined. And so I'm very confident that once we start building the big generators, I've set for myself a plan of 10 years to convert countries, entire countries, over to wind energy using the Wing Generator. Now, as you can probably imagine, this is not going to go over well because energy is probably the biggest controlling mechanism in the world today. There's another development that is on the heels of the Wing Generator, and that is a device that can take seawater and change it into fresh water. And this is not rocket science. This is the small systems have already been developed and are being used. And so now it's a question of building bigger systems to take seawater, convert it into fresh water offshore, and then pump it into the population centers. About a very high percentage of the world population lives within 100 miles of the ocean, of the sea someplace, which is salty. And so if you could have energy from the wind, which is plentiful in those areas, especially around the ocean on the coastline, if you could have energy that was plentiful and fresh water from the ocean water, take a look at the world from a distance. And in a sense, we don't have a water shortage of fresh water on the planet. We have a water management problem that is extreme. So this one device potentially can solve the two biggest problems in the world, energy and water. And with those two things, here's something that happens, and it happened in the United States about 15 years ago. The United States population was declining, and that's because of prosperity. If you look at the regions of the world that have vast increase in population, and I did this as part of one of my shows a number of months ago, possibly a year ago, I was talking about statistics of world population, etc. You look at the 20 countries in the world where the population is absolutely exploding, they're all countries that are really dirt poor. I mean, that's the best thing you could say about them, is that they are just absolutely poor, and it's not because of their own fault. It's because of the International Monetary Fund and the World Banking Community that keep these countries in dire straits, in absolute dire need, and in the dirt. But the end result is that this is where the vast population growth areas are, sometimes as much as 7 to 10% per year, just phenomenal growth rates. And so prosperity, water, energy, etc., would bring these population centers down. I mean, there's just no way to look at it. Russia, oddly enough, is a fairly prosperous country. Now, what's prosperous? Everybody driving SUVs up and down the road all day long? No, that's not prosperous. Prosperous is having your house paid for, your transportation, and living simply within your means. So gross national product of Russia is about the size of Italy. But they have an army, navy, air force, etc., that rivals that of the United States. How are they managing this? Because in the United States, it's just not possible to the equipment of the United States military is all worn out from little petty wars running all over the world, going on constantly. So right now, there was an announcement just last week that the U.S. military, a good deal of its equipment is out of service. because of just overuse. But at any rate, the point is that your standard of living is not commensurate with gross national product or growth rate. That's a misconception in the Western economic model. In fact, Russia's population, this is my point, was being reduced. It was going down. It was becoming smaller. And that's what the United States was doing 20 years ago before the explosive illegal immigration problem and the concept that what they call anchor babies, you know, women and young girls of all ages having babies, hoping that that baby would allow them to stay there. And then potentially a boyfriend or a husband too, and their family. So within 15 years, the United States population went from 270 million to about 325 million overnight. About 55 million people all of a sudden were added in the past 15 to 20 years. Tremendous growth rate where it was declining previously. But if you provide energy and water and food and shelter and a decent lifestyle to people, the population goes down. So solving the world population problem, if we don't have nuclear wars that blows everybody up, then is solvable simply through economics, providing decent living conditions for people. And that means reasonable energy prices and reasonable access to fresh water. So the wing generator can provide that. And once third world countries start prospering because they're out of the loop of having to pay high exorbitant prices for energy, etc., and are able to grow their own food, then we're looking at a world whose population will come under control naturally. So those are side effects of having energy that's readily available. And as I said, look at, for example, the Hoover Dam, the amount of cement and structure and infrastructure that had to be built. And by today's standard, it probably would be impossible to build the Hoover Dam. It was built in the Depression, you know, when money was certainly a different entity than it is today. But four of the large-scale wing generators could replace the energy produced by the Hoover Dam, and the infrastructure cost a thousandth the amount of infrastructure cost to build the four wing generators. And of course, they can be placed any place in the country, and especially offshore. That's the final solution. And from this meager beginning, from what I'm starting with right now, and you can be part of this. So the wing generator plans will be coming available very shortly, and with a good deal of supporting information. So just trying to promote that. And a lot of times I don't announce my topics before I release information, but this one has already been public, so that's no secret. And very shortly, all I'm going to say is this will lead to other projects, which will lead to other projects, and that's how it's going to grow, with you very much being in the helping process. At this point, I'm going to talk about some of the larger scale projects for relative to the wing generator. Imagine that you are a small city and that you have a nuclear generator nearby of 500 megawatts, for example. A city the size of, say, Minneapolis would use about 7 nuclear power plants. That's the amount of energy requirement of a city of that size. And so if you could imagine trading this off for 7 wing generators that sit down in, say, the southwest part of the state, where Xcel Energy currently has thousands of 3-blade wind generators that don't work, imagine putting only 5 or 6 of the large-scale wing generators in place to provide the energy, and then remove those 4 nuclear power plants. Nuclear power is the biggest disaster in the world. The United States has 104 nuclear power plants, and they're all leaking. It's an environmental disaster, and we absolutely have to get off of nuclear power, eventually get off of coal, and eventually get off of petroleum. So, and this is all very doable with the wing generators. If you're interested in finding more details, my book, McCanny Wing Generator, available on my webpage, has a lot more detail, a lot more specifics, a lot more numerical information to tell you how this works, and also commensurate with the large-scale wing generators would be the concept of distributed energy. In other words, the Central Power Company is a distribution center, but it does not control the voltage. The voltage is actually controlled by the wing generators. And these are coordinated so that when the voltage comes to your house, you have an adjustment, which, by the way, I guarantee you that 99% of you out there already have these. I don't know how many of these I have. You know, I think there's 3 or 4 right now in the house where I happen to be right now. And they are voltage protectors, and they also have a battery backup. And they're basically to even out the voltage that comes into the equipment in the house, the computers, the TVs, the refrigerators. Refrigerators do not fare well when the voltage is fluctuating. And so these now would be consolidated into one unit at the house, or possibly up the block, a unit that would service maybe 4 or 5 houses. And then the energy would be distributed, and you would have surge protection, you would have constant voltage, you would have protection against power outages, and all of this would be controlled in the Central Power Company with the big coal-burning generators or with the nuclear power plants would all go away. And they could start decommissioning these. Decommissioning a coal plant is not that difficult. Decommissioning a nuclear power plant, extremely, extremely costly and difficult, given the fact that they're all leaking. If they weren't leaking, decommissioning could take 10 to 20 to 30 years. But since they're leaking, that water is going into the water table and probably causing a lot of cancer people in the local area. So this is something that's really important. By the way, just stay tuned to my webpage, jmccsci.com. Remember to join the paid cast. That helps out quite a bit. Also, the water filter sale is still on, will be for a number of days. So go there and take advantage of those wonderful prices on great water filter products. And keep an eye out for the wing generator release coming here shortly. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.